One of the things that happened was when I got there, there were a series of candidates teed up for the various positions. One of the candidates teed up for general deputy was a guy named Peter Monroe, who came with extraordinary recommendations from a whole group of people, including Dick Danels. Some of the, in fact, I think Dave Barrett was one of the guys who recommended Monroe, I'm not sure. And Peter turned out to be a terrible disappointment. I asked him early on to take on coinsurance. And Peter was one of those guys, he was a staff guy, not a line guy. And he couldn't pull the trigger. He couldn't walk into a situation, create a framework, break it down, get the information, lay out the options, figure out what the process was to get, you know, who needed to be in on the decision, and then run a process whereby a decision emerged in a way that was sustainable or viable or covered or vetted or anything else. You know, he couldn't get it done. It took me a while to understand it because I asked him to handle coinsurance and he just kept going around in circles. Well, part of the problem with Peter was, you know, when you run a line operation and you got five guys that you're reporting to, or you got 20 guys who you're reporting to and who are reporting to you or you're coordinating with on a matrix structure, you've got to keep all sides. God, there are funny noises in this house. You've got to keep all sides square against the middle. You can't be telling the guy on the right that you're going to go to the right and then telling the guy on the left that you're going to go to the left, because it all comes together in the time and the money and operations. And so you got to have one picture reality, make sure everybody throughout the operation is clear on what that picture is. Peter's way of dealing with everybody was to tell everybody what they wanted to hear that minute. And of course, what you'd get is an operational nightmare. Well, for some reason, Della Bovee and Keating and Scott Reed and Jack decided that the way to get stuff done in my operation was to simply tell Peter to do this and that and to undercut me. And their theory was that Peter would have, they told all the deputies to report to Peter and then told Peter to report to them. And they figured they could just cut me out. Well, the problem was Peter was incompetent. So he would tell them he'd do something when it wasn't feasible operationally. And then he'd order one of the deputies and then the deputies would come to me. And so finally what the deputies and I did, because we just had to get the work done, was we just report to each other what Peter was saying or doing, and then try and sort out what we thought the Tensler wanted, and then figure out how to get the work done. Because my attitude was, you know, whatever the secretary wanted done was fine. I didn't, you know, other than the financial accountability stuff, which had all been vetted and approved by Jack in the White House, I just didn't have, my attitude is, you know, was our job was not policy. That was the job of the secretary in the White House. So, anyway, so they kept trying to use Peter, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And of course, it didn't work because Peter wasn't competent. And most of their problems related to the fact that what they wanted contradicted what they wanted. So they would order us to go to the right, but then the consequences of going to the right was that you weren't going to left, and they didn't like that. And so they'd order us to go to the left, and then we didn't go to the right. And they just weren't willing to live, you know. They weren't willing to look at the thing whole and be accountable, let alone to communicate what they really wanted. So finally, all of Peter's machinations and their machinations through Peter weren't going anywhere. In the meantime, the word was going around in the agency and Congress, if you wanted to get anything done at HUD, go see me, because what was slowly happening was I would take responsibility for anything I asked someone to do. So if a political appointee underneath me or a career person underneath me did something that I ordered and it went wrong, I would take responsibility. So, you know, there are a million times a week when I'd be up in Jack or Della Bovee or Scott's office, and they'd be screaming at me and say, you know, I want you to fire this person or that person. And I'd say, well, you can't, because that's my, you know, I'm responsible. You have to fire me. And so, for a variety of reasons, one, I was confident, but two, I would take responsibility. Everybody would follow me, and so I could get just what I could get done quickly was amazing, because I was learning the operation. And as I was getting people networked, it was easier and easier to do. And the other thing is, I would write up business plans and get clear in writing what it was the secretary wanted us to do, and then implement in writing, and all of it was, you know, written and approved, and then thousands of bureaucrats could function according to a written plan and know that they were safe and protected. So things, it's amazing to me, but a remarkable amount of stuff was getting done. You had a lot of good career staff. As long as you had a written plan and air cover, really wanted to, you know, have useful days at work. Anyway, so Monroe just got worse and worse and worse, and so finally they gave up and got very down on Peter because he had failed to take me out. And they put him forward for the staff director of the RTC after the first guy who took it left town quickly. So anyway, Peter Monroe comes to me and he says, look, here's what's been going on for the last 6 months. I've been under orders from the secretary to take you out. I've done everything I could to destroy your credibility within the organization. None of it's worked, and I'm sorry, I apologize, but now I want to go to the RTC. Will you intercede and give me a good recommendation with Secretary Brady? And I'm sitting there listening to this guy and thinking, this is the dumbest white man that I have ever worked with. And so, anyway, then Brady's general counsel calls me and says, you know, what's this guy? I said, for what you want for a staff position, he's adequate. You know, and so I told Peter, no harm done. I've covered your bases with the Brady folks, and, you know, you're forgiven, I'm forgiven, let's be friends. Well, 2 days later, I get a call from the White House, from the number two at the Office of Personnel, and said, you know, you're dead. You're dead at the White House. I said, what are you talking about? She said, you know, we thought that Kemp was nuts and you were fine. But this guy, Peter Monroe, just came over and did an hour debriefing, and the only thing he talked about how was everything going wrong at HUD was entirely your fault. The secretary was a wonderful guy. The people around the secretary are wonderful. And that you're just, like, incompetent and crazy and everything else. And she said, you know, it's really hurt you at the White House. And I thought, what a bunch of guys, great guys. So lo and behold, they take Peter over to the RTC thing to get the vote for him to become the executive director. And Peter's supposed to give a presentation, and he's behaving in a way that's really irritating Jack. And Jack turns around in the middle of the meeting and says, you know something, Peter? You are a Fruit Loop. You are totally useless. You know, you are so pathetic, you cannot even take out a woman. And it's funny because all these guys never understood that that the work had to get done. And you had 7,000 bureaucrats who knew the work had to get done, and you had 500 congressmen and senators and their staff, and a couple thousand people at OMB in the White House who knew the work had to get done, and needed somebody who could do it. And it never occurred to most of them that if you wanted to take me out, the way to do it was to do a better job of getting the work done than I did. But I guess that was too... too plebeian or too pedestrian or something like that. Anyway, but it was interesting, and it was an interesting example of how profound and deep and powerful their hatred of women was. I've, you know, it's funny, I ran into tremendous hatred of women on Wall Street, but the interesting thing, you could take the worst woman hater on Wall Street and find out how he enjoyed making money, which find a way into his heart, and so find a way to get along or coexist, or not be at war. But what was interesting about Washington was these guys had no basis to optimize from. And they were so emotionally insecure. And so in need of harming other people. And there was something about a woman who... didn't want what they want and didn't need what they need and would play clean and straight. That they just couldn't deal with. And what was hard over the 18-month period is their emotional craving to destroy me just kept going up. And it was, you know, it was just inexplicable. Anyway, I know that part of it was deep down inside they desperately wanted me to admire them and almost worship them, and they were always so embarrassed because I was a better man than they were. I'll give you an example. We had a bunch of year-end deals, tax credit deals that needed to be processed. And at the end of the year, they just gridlocked. Everybody was much too scared to make the decision, so I went ahead and processed them and or oversaw the processing of them and approving them. But I coordinated and spoke through all the deals with Delabovi, and he and I agreed on what should be done and how it should be done, and everything was vetted by both of us. And in January, somebody writes a story criticizing one of them, and Jack goes ballistic and decides that something horrible and nefarious has gone on. And Delabovi sat in all the meetings and completely denied any responsibility or knowledge of any of them. Now, it was interesting. Most of the people in the meeting knew that Delabovi was involved. They'd seen him, they'd felt him, they'd heard him, and they knew that it had been totally it. They knew it had been a shared effort. They also knew that if we hadn't processed the deals, we'd be getting many more headlines, and a lot of powerful, important people would be screaming at us for not approving what were totally legitimate, okay deals. So I'm sitting in the meeting, and Delabovi just takes a complete duck. And so what I did was Jack, you know, was screaming at me, and I said, you know, Mr. Secretary, I absolutely reviewed and approved these deals. I'd be delighted to explain to you why I did. I believe that that was you know, what you would prefer doing other than the alternative. But if you feel otherwise, you know, I take police complete responsibility, and please feel free to hold me, you know, fully accountable. And in no way, shape, or form did I even mention that I had sought and gotten Della Bovee's approval. I just sat there in front of all the top principal staff, said, I'm the responsible official. These were FHA deals. I'm the commissioner of the FHA. And I approved all of them. And if I did something wrong, you know, please feel free to chop off my head. And I didn't try and tag Della Bovee at all. And Della Bovee, you know, ran and essentially hid behind my skirts. And I was very calm. I was very professional. Jack was, as usual, not very professional. And when the meeting was over, I was the most powerful person in the room, and you could just feel it in the room. I had all the power. And and I think that was hard on their egos. I'm sure it was hard on Della Bovee's ego. Now, one of the ways they like to try and hurt me was to say things to people on Wall Street or the press that would destroy my reputation or ability to function after I left the agency. At one point early on, I don't think I told this story. I got a call from Business Week. Did I tell that story? They wanted to do an article on me, and I got a call from Howard Rubenstein's guy up in New York who does financial markets. He says, you know, Business Week is asking all these questions. They're really out to get you. And I said, well, Business Week is never out to get anybody. How can Business Week be out to get somebody? They said, no, they're really out to get you. So they send in this reporter to write this article, and Della Bovee's pushing it, which is strange because they're never pushing for me to get any press. So the guy comes in, and he's watching, and he's a black guy who turns out to be a really cool guy, and he just hates my guts. It was unbelievable. And so he walks in and he says, how come you always wear black? And I said, can I borrow your pen? He said, sure. And I took his pen and I scratched it up and down my dress. And he was very shocked. And I said, now, what do you see? And he said, nothing. And I said, exactly. Now you know why I wear black. And he just started to laugh. And then he just dumped all these questions about total garbage he'd been fed. We got through that, and then we started to talk. It turns out he was a fabulous guy. Well, the next thing you know, Business Week writes this wonderful puff piece on me, and then Jack and Della Bovee are really mad because I think they thought it was going to be, you know, something that tore me apart. But one of the ways they'd try and hurt me was constantly discussing or making comments about my physical appearance and my dress. They used to do it to other people. But one of my favorite stories is when Jack called me up into his office and said to me, I want you to know that I want to discuss with you the length of your skirts. And we proceeded to have a 30-minute conversation about the length of my skirts, in which Jack essentially ordered me to lengthen all my skirts. Now, as I was sitting there, I was thinking, I can't believe that I'm talking to a cabinet secretary who is ordering me to lengthen my skirts. I can't believe I'm having this conversation. I also knew that if I didn't handle it right, that I would be punished. And the way they would punish me is that they would do the one thing that they would do the one thing that could hurt me, and that is to hurt one of the career people who worked for me need to take somebody and detail them to a office, you know, in a way that would harm them and their family. You know, so they detail them to the Anchorage office or whatever. So I sat there and I said, you know, I'm responsible for 7,000 people, and I cannot afford for one of my senior people to lose their job or get detailed to Alaska because of this incident. And so I don't care how illegal or unethical or how godless this human being is behaving. I've got to find a way to deal with this that is effective for my people. And I took a deep breath. Robbie and I used to call it blowjobs. And I gave Jack one of the best verbal blowjobs I have ever given in my life. And I said, oh, Mr. Secretary, I said, you are so brave and courageous for being willing to say this to my face instead of asking, you know, one of the women to tell me. I feel so terrible that my clothing has in any way embarrassed or distracted you. This is unforgivable, and I want you to know that I appreciate your forthrightness, and I intend to make sure that my wardrobe, you know, reflects the standards that you set for this agency, and I just want you to know I really appreciate your honesty. Blah, 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 blah. But, you know, oozing and wiggling and blushing and, you know, looking at him like he was a god. And it worked, because he didn't hurt anybody. But I assure you, I never changed one of my skirts. But when I left, I knew that I would never again in my life place myself between people that I cared about and an authority figure who used power for personal pleasure, as opposed to for the mission, whatever the mission was. I made the mistake of thinking that if I started my own firm and I kept control of the A shares, that would be enough. And that was before I understood that the ability of the patriarchy in this country to manipulate the laws for political purposes is would essentially place me in the same position of being responsible for the health and well-being of, say, 100 people when I had the equivalent of same yo-yos on the other side. Now, I say that I chose to continue to try and learn and break down for intellectual mastery the illiquid side of the world. And these things are more likely to happen on the illiquid side of the world.